But we have always been, and this is one thing I have discovered, and possibly the most important thing of the lot, we have always been interested in finding out religious truth. And I am not a bit surprised that I spent so much of my time and effort in my last incarnation propagating Christianity. My only regret is that I did not propagate, or did not accept, what I now know to be the truth. You and I have been associated with religion in all our incarnations. We have always been seekers. Self, I hope you will not incarnate again before I come over. Douglas, no, I do not think I shall ever incarnate again, and I do not think you will. Our links with Earth will be finished, I am sure of that. I do not want to come back, and I am quite sure you will not. On this side there is so much I want to learn and discover and find out. The greatest joy here is this incessant discovery, this constant experiencing of new things. Life never ceases to be wonderful. There is always something fresh and new to discover and understand. I have never known such peace and calm, such placidity, as I know now. I feel more at peace than ever before, and the fact that you know about this is a constant joy to me. This is the greatest blessing of all, that we have this communication. But if you want me to, and I am sure you do, in the future I will concentrate on incarnations and go into as much detail as I can. It might make an interesting book, at least, it will interest you. And obviously, it would be best for me to start with the earliest incarnation I can remember with any clarity, which is, of course, in Egypt. Perhaps we can talk about that next time. Anyway, I shall try to go back in time and give you some idea of my experiences. In the meantime, all my love and do not worry, because I think everything is going to be all right. Mickey, cheerily, goodbye. Come again soon, Auntie Geocacher. Chapter 2. A Priest in the Temples of Karnak. While the medium and I were exchanging news, a clear, familiar, boyish voice filled the room. Mickey, nice to see you, Auntie. Do you come to London a lot? Self, no, only when I come to hear you. Mickey, oh really? That is a compliment. You do not come up to do shopping or anything? Self, no, Mickey. Mickey, I expect there are shops down where you live, ain't there? I do not suppose you do much shopping. A lot of people who live on their own eat out. Do you like fish and chips? Self, laughing, I expect I did in my youth, but I have been a vegetarian for a very long time. Mickey, gosh. Can't you eat fish if you're a vegetarian? Oh dear. You do not like a nice piece of place or something then. Giving me up, oh well, hold on. Douglas, joining in the fun, what is he talking about? Fish, wasn't it? Mickey ought to know by now that you are a vegetarian. Self, I rarely speak of these things, dear. Douglas, it has probably never struck him that you were, but it is extraordinary how much he does know about those who come here. Well dear, have you something special in mind you want me to talk about? Self, yes, you promised to tell me about your earliest incarnation in Egypt. Douglas, of course I did. Self, when do you learn about these incarnations? Douglas, it comes very gradually and, there again, it rather depends on each individual as to how anxious they are to assimilate knowledge and experience, and how much they desire to know regarding themselves and the past. Obviously, on first coming over here one is so full of the excitement of this life, making new friends, meeting old acquaintances and relations, and so on, that one does not think too seriously about oneself in the sense of one's past lives, even assuming that one knows anything about the possibility of past lives. The vast majority of people are only concerned with the life they have just left. Very few people have any realization that there is such a thing as reincarnation. Therefore, most people take a very long time before they begin to delve into the possibilities of the present and the past. In fact, the great majority of people are quite happy and contented to be, I suppose you might say, static. It is not until you understand this life more fully that you begin to realize that the past is important and that one has had, invariably, many existences. It is when you begin to meet people over here who claim acquaintanceship with you, and recall past experiences of their own, who start to tell you about yourself, and about how you had known this or that person, and how this or that experience had happened to you, then you realize how your lives have been entwined. I know now something which I never understood before, and that is that we are all part of a group soul, although we are individuals and we retain our individuality and personality. It is something which has evolved through centuries of experience. We do not suddenly become, we only become through trial and error, through experience, and we only begin to assimilate this, and realize its full potency, and what it really is, and what it really has achieved when we are able to see ourselves in retrospect. The vast majority assume that from birth to the grave is our life, whereas actually, it is only one of a whole series of lives in which we have had different bodies, under different conditions and in different periods of time, in which we have had opportunity to experience many things which have all helped to build up the real individual personality and character. We are all the product of experiences, not only of ourselves, but also of others, because we can never live by ourselves. On Earth we like to think we are a self-contained unit, but we are not. We are the product of all sorts of minds, all sorts of influences, all sorts of experiences, and it would be impossible to assimilate everything in one body in one life. Therefore we have had many many lives in which we have been male and female, and in which perhaps we have only been a child who died at an early age. It is so important to realize that it is only when you have had innumerable experiences that you can really begin to see yourself as a fully fledged individual. My earliest recollection, and that only came to me very gradually, because I suppose it was so far removed and so distant in time itself, was in a very early Egyptian dynasty in which I was a priest. I want to put this in proper perspective, but evidently, as far as one can recollect and recapture memory at all, I have always been a seeker. I have always been one who was anxious to discover and to know the reality of life. I have always wanted to find out the secrets of life. I have always wanted to find out what really made one tick. I can see now that I was always attracted to religion. I was always linked up with religion in some shape or form. That does not mean to say that I was necessarily a religious person, because there is a vast difference between being a religious person in the full sense of the term, and being religiously interested, or even inclined. This may sound paradoxical, but it is true. I was a priest in the temples of Karnak and was initiated in my very early youth, and this must go back to 3,000-4,000 years before Christ. This is what I have been told, not what I can remember from experience, so I can only repeat it as such because so far I have not got a clear picture of it. I do not know if you can understand this, but I must try to put it as best I can. I was a legitimate son of one of the pharaohs. The pharaohs had many concubines. I suppose it was something which was accepted at the time, but anyway, I was one of many children, and I was put to the temple when I was about 10 or 12. I was a singer, having a childish voice but evidently a good one, and I was taught the melodic harmonies and music generally. I became a server, that is someone who serves at the altar, and I was one of many children, presumably, in processions, who contributed towards the ceremonies associated with the temples. As I got older, I was initiated and taken into the priesthood. Eventually I became a priest, and in this incarnation I lived to be very old. I also had great power on account of having been in the priesthood for so long, and because the priesthood and the royal house were very closely linked. I do not think people fully understand that, but it is true. This was in a reign when there were many wars. Self, when were there not wars? Douglas, there were periods when there was comparative peace, but this was a very warlike period. There were many wars, major and minor ones, border ones, all sorts of things. And part of my work was to visit armies. I am talking now about my middle age, taking the replicas of the gods and taking the retinue of servants and priests and people who were connected with the rituals and ceremonies. The priesthood was very powerful, much more powerful than perhaps people are given to understand, and it was necessary for certain sections of the priesthood to be attached to the armies. They were not necessarily fighting forces, but they were there to give strength, spiritual, so-called, to the soldiers, especially those who were given charge of vast numbers of men. I visited many places. I went to Syria, Assyria, and many other places which time has completely obliterated. There were many races, many interwoven races, and there were many varying sections of Egyptian races. Actually, from what I can gather, the Egyptian race, in its very early infancy that is, was a nomadic race. But I am going back long before my experiences of this to what I have been told. Evidently, from what I can gather, I have always been either very much with religion or very much opposed to religion. Now you cannot reconcile me with opposition, but the point is that there was always an interest in religion. I was either very much for, or very much against. In other words, I suppose it is that ever since time immemorial, since I was an individual at all, I was always curious to know more about religion and what lay behind it, and about life after death, and communication. In the early Egyptian time of which I speak, communication was a very important part of the temple ceremony. Not of a public ceremony, I am talking now about a private and very personal one. It was a kind of seance in which children, strangely enough young boys, were used as mediums. This was probably because of their purity of mind and lack of experience of the outer world. Also, you do find that a lot of phenomena take place around children, poltergeist phenomena and so on. Children, especially at a certain age, give off a certain something which is very conducive to psychic phenomena, and it was a common thing for young boys to be used as instruments. And evidently I had some experience in that direction. In ancient Rome, where I had another experience at a later time, I was very much against religion. This is the constant war, if you like, and the constant fight within oneself, seeking. And, of course, you can never assimilate knowledge if you are always on one side of the fence. The extraordinary thing is that you have got to experience so many things in so many different ways. You have all the time to be, not exactly at war with yourself, or at war with life generally, but you have always got to be seeking and searching, sometimes putting up opposition because that opposition may draw some new aspect of knowledge to you. That is why I think it is so stupid of people to accept blindly something of which they do not necessarily have any evidence or proof. They accept it literally without attempting to dissect it, or criticize it, or analyze it, or open their minds to new thought and new ideas. Truth is always changing. I do not mean to say that it is not still truth, but the point is that there is always a new aspect of truth, there is always something new to learn, to gain, some new experience to discover, and so on. Self, as you were a priest in that early Egyptian period, I suppose I was not with you in that incarnation. Douglas, in that incarnation you were not with me because priests did not marry. But that does not alter the fact that they did have illegal affairs. In the Roman incarnation period of which I was speaking, at the time of Nero and the time of the early Christians, I was not against the Christians, but I was not a believer in Christianity. I certainly resented to some extent the infiltration of this thought into Roman affairs and particularly into politics, because it did begin to influence politics, strange as it may seem talking about it now. There were a vast number of people in high places who did accept Christianity, though they did not necessarily come out into the open about it at that period. I lost one or two very dear friends at that time through the Christian teachings because they changed their way of life and their thought, and it made a rift. I was a very martial person in that period. In fact, I was a person of high standing in the armies of Rome. At the time of which I speak in Rome, after I had retired because I was too old for soldiering, I had a very beautiful villa built which became our home, and at that time you were my wife and we had 5 children. Self, laughing, and where are they now? Douglas, you say where are the 5 children? You see, one assumes and one thinks purely on a basis of physical relationship. This is something which we must clarify. We talk about a life in which we were married and in which we had children. And for the first time, as far as I know, the close ties of family, but we must remember that over 2,000 years there have been many changes within ourselves, and the links that were so strong in a family sense, or a material sense, have changed. This does not mean, however, that there are not still the links and the affections and the love, because love increases. But with the increase in love and the increase in affection comes a newer knowledge, and a newer realization that we are all so much part of each other that the physical relationships, or the physical aspect of relationships, no longer have the same meaning. Husband and wife, son and daughter, and so on have not the same meaning after a long period of time here. They are important, but here it is a wider vision of mind and of spirit which links us together. I have known people who have said, "Oh, I had three husbands. When I come to your side, which one shall I be with?" It is quite possible that the person concerned will not be with any of them, or it may well be that they will live in a communal sense. But one must divorce oneself from the physical aspect of relationships and put everything on a mental and a spiritual plane, and then you realize that the qualities of the varying individuals are the important factor. It is not whether you love this husband more than that one. Love is something which is fluid, and the more one's love is, the more it increases, the more it gives out, the more it embraces and draws together all people concerned. We must try to understand, in this greater conception of things, that love is the predominant factor behind all life. Love is so all-embracing that it can only be truly realized and understood when it ceases to be too personal from the point of view of possessiveness. It is important to realize that although you and I will be together when we are here, it will be on a much higher mental and spiritual plane. And in consequence of your coming, you will be introduced to and come to know of many people long associated with us, and you will begin to visualize things more clearly and appreciate things more completely. You will become part of this great whole, because, as I said before, all spirit is one spirit, and although we are individuals in as much as we have individual personality and character, which is an accumulation of centuries of learning and experience, we are nevertheless all part of the other. My progression is, in a sense, your progression. The more I progress, the more you progress, because the love and affection that I have for you, and the strength that I bring to you, enables you to come closer, and to assimilate, as you will when you come here, even more than you probably could have done if we were not together, for instance if we had never met. Sometimes people's lives are bound together over centuries, over many incarnations, and we become truly one spirit in the fullest sense. It is necessary to rid oneself of the individual I am and to consider oneself as part of the great complete whole, part of the divine plan, the divine spirit. Many people have false values concerning themselves and religion, particularly, I refer to this idea that people have when they accept religion, whatever creed or dogma it may be, that they are individuals and they are going to be completely saved or made whole, and that they are going to be in a form of life in which they will play a very important part. These people do not seem to appreciate that the only way to find your true identity is to lose it. It is not being saved in that sense that matters. It is that you have within yourself the capacity for saving yourself by your desire for truth, your desire for knowledge, by your acceptance, and yet at the same time also, by your rejection. To appreciate white you must have black, and you must have an intermediary condition of grey. All our lives are bound up together in as much as we are all part and parcel of each other, and where one person falls, although the other person involved may have risen to a great height, they willingly lower themselves to help the lesser one. We cannot rise or achieve anything until we forget ourselves in love and service and accept the fact that we are all part of the great brotherhood of man, we are all part of the great plan, we are all part of the God Spirit, we are all the same Spirit, but we manifest ourselves under different guises, in different period of time, in different bodies, under different circumstances. It is the same spirit that animates all life, and it is all this one spirit and the oneness of spirit that makes all things tangible, and all things realizable, and all things possible, and certainly it is this divine spirit that makes each of us realize our potential and our possibilities. We must never lose sight of the fact that although we are individuals, we cannot rise without other people rising also. And the fact that they are helping us and we are helping them is the answer to all the problems and all the confusions. We must never consider that we have all the answers. I have learnt so much in the time that I have been here. Religion, properly understood and properly applied in the fullest sense, is the answer. But not religion in a narrow greedy way, not in the way in which so many people would have one go, that can often bring despair and confusion. One's mind must ever be open and free to accept, or reject if necessary, not to be tied, not to be fettered. I must go, but we will talk about these things another time. Chapter 3. Priesthood in Parua, Medicine and Care for the Poor. Mr. Flint and I had been chatting, not realizing that Mickey was waiting to open the seance. Mickey, you've been a long time nattering, you and old Flint can't half talk. Self, laughing. It all helps, doesn't it, Mickey? Mickey, well, yes. I'm only teasing. I look forward to seeing you. So interesting, at least, your husband is. Laughter. Are you going to write any more books? Self, that depends on Douglas. Douglas, assuming an aggrieved tone, everything is left to me. Self, it does seem hard, doesn't it? Douglas, brightening, no, not at all. Although I must admit that as far as I am concerned, at times, anyway, it is difficult to do always what one would wish. The whole point is that every human being has free will and no one has the right to interfere with that. One can make suggestions, one can give counsel, one can advise, but you can never force anyone to do anything if it is against their nature or their desire. That is where we are stymied. Everyone must work out their own salvation in their own way. I realize that more and more. A great teacher, a great prophet, Christ, for instance, comes into the world, sets an example, gives us teachings and a way of life, and indeed gives us so much that could be our salvation, but if we choose to ignore it and intend to go in the opposite direction, it cannot be forced. We can be led, but we cannot be forced. And that is the tragedy with the world as it is today. The vast majority of people are only concerned with self, they are only concerned with material things, they are not concerned with things of the mind and the spirit. As for the few who are, their voices cry out in the wilderness. We can only try our utmost to put this truth before people and hope that they will accept it or inquire into it. We cannot force it. In any case, that would not be any good. If a person did something with no will behind it, no real desire from within himself, it would be useless and pointless. It must come from within. Anyway, what shall we talk about? Self, I am hoping to hear more about your incarnations. Last time you told me about an early incarnation in Egypt when you were a priest. Douglas, I remember that quite well. Self, I thought we had two Egyptian incarnations together. Douglas, yes, I'm sure we had two, and there is a possibility, almost a certainty, of a third. But it is too dim, I cannot recapture it at all. Of course, we have had so many. We had an incarnation in Italy during what was termed the Renaissance. Self, can you tell me about that? Douglas, yes. I was a priest again. I seem always to have been seeking and searching for religious experience. I was a priest from about the age of 18 and, as far as I can gather, I lived to be a very old man, over 80. I came of a noble family and in my youth I was very disturbed in my mind with regard to the whole way of life of the times. As I was of a high family I was given every opportunity to do all the things that I wanted to do. But I was so distressed at the appalling poverty around and about where we lived, which in those days was much worse than you can possibly imagine, that I made up my mind to use whatever wealth and power I had to help the poor. This soon put me into disrepute with the people of my own standing. They did not like it. And, in consequence, realizing that the situation was impossible, I left my family and went into holy orders. This was at Parua. Can you hear me, self? Very well. Douglas, I was always concerned with the poor people and I studied medicine. I learnt what there was to be learnt of medicine in those times. I was very interested in herbs and their curative properties. It was my job to look after the brothers, and the poor who came to us for help, the sick and the suffering, and to give solace to the dying. This was a very interesting period of my life, and of course I was a celibate and not in any way involved with the opposite sex. And although I had known you when I was a young man and it had been planned that we should marry, I turned my back on everything of life, including my love for you, which was the only thing that was a temptation to me to hold on to my old way of life. But my religious inclinations and my desire to serve were very strong, and also I wanted to withdraw to some extent from the world. However, I did not withdraw really, because although I went into this order, my work lay very much with people, and I went from place to place. There was a period of time when I had special dispensation to act on behalf of the order, and to go from place to place preaching the gospel, healing the sick and suffering, and endeavoring to gain knowledge and also to write. I became something of a writer and wrote quite a number of volumes which, I regret to say, were destroyed. Some years after my death there was a great fire and the monastery in which they were kept was burned down. I travelled the whole length and breadth of Italy and in France and Spain. I spent much time studying languages because I felt it was important, if I was to do this work that I had been asked to do and that I wanted to do, to know as many languages as possible. I spoke at least 6 languages apart from Latin. Self, wonderful. Douglas, but you married, you know. I discovered, I heard, one does. In any case, for the first few years I was working very close to Padua and in Padua itself. You married a very rich man and you had many children, and died comparatively young, in your 30s. Your name was Heloise in that period, and my name was Rodrigo. Self, how interesting. Douglas, the funny thing was that although I was Italian by birth, my mother was Spanish and she married this Italian nobleman, and I was given a Spanish Christian name among many others, but I was referred to, and known as, Rodrigo. Self, was that a fairly pleasant time to live in? Douglas, no. If you were a person of wealth and position, it was not exactly an uncomfortable time because you were able to surround yourself with all the luxuries of that period. But there was such terrible disease and poverty, and there were no known cures for many of these things. I became tremendously interested in medicine and made a big study of it. Indeed, I effected cures which previously had never been known. I used to ride by horse throughout the breadth of Europe, well, certainly a lot of Europe, and I was killed. This may strike you as strange, that although I lived to be an old man and by all natural causes I should have died of old age, I was killed by an accident of some slating falling from a roof onto my head. Self, oh, dear. Douglas, you know I had great regard and respect for Francis. I was very drawn to him. Self, was he contemporary? Douglas, yes, of course, and I was indirectly associated with him. I met him on several occasions. He had wonderful psychic experiences. He was definitely psychic from the point of view that he was clairaudient and he sometimes had levitation of the body. He had great spiritual experiences, as indeed did many of the brothers. When one withdraws from the material world, and encloses oneself in the quietude and peace of a sanctuary and one is all the time reflecting on things of the mind and of the spirit, one becomes more perceptive to things of the spirit, and able to overcome many of the bodily drawbacks. It is an extraordinary thing. Of course there were many things that went on in those times in the monasteries and the retreats among some of the brothers which were not, in my opinion, of any great value. I think they were bad things. The chastisement, the wearing of the sackcloth and so on achieved nothing as far as I can see, although to some no doubt it was considered a great blessing and help. I never saw eye to eye on many things. In fact, there were times when I think they were quite glad for me to leave the order and go on my trips. Although by nature I was hot-tempered, I had learned to subdue that. Even so, I was very forthright and there were many things which I did not like and tried as far as it was in my power to change. But rules are rules and regulations are regulations, and it was very difficult. Some of the older brothers, I am talking about when I was a younger man, really thought that I was too hot-headed and too anxious to make change. Indeed, sometimes they thought I was not as spiritual as I might have been. Their idea to a certain extent, but at the same time I think they went to such limits that it struck me as being rather silly. I was not always able to make them see my point of view, and I was often in trouble with them.